Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is headed to East Asia today. First up, an official visit to Seoul, South Korea, to talk strategy for the Indo-Pacific region. And then he is headed to Hiroshima, Japan, to join the G7 Leaders Summit. What are the expectations? Well, for more, we're joined by Orel Braun, who is the political scientist at the University of Toronto. Hello there.
Hello.
Let's start with South Korea. In terms of what you think Trudeau wants to accomplish there, what would the main goal be?
South Korea is a very important trading partner of Canada's. We have a trade that runs bilaterally to about $17 billion. And South Korea is producing sophisticated batteries, and they want lithium from Canada. So it's a natural fit. We therefore can combine strategic as well as economic goals. South Korea is in a crucial geographical location, close to Russia, close to China, and next to a nuclear North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have that as a stable area. And also, South Korea has become a key supplier of sophisticated armaments, including heavy weapons to Poland, which has allowed Poland to then ship all the tanks to Ukraine.
So what would Canada want to then get South Korea to do? You're saying that they want the lithium. So what would what do you think Trudeau would be pushing?
We would like to focus on issues of climate. So we want to move more towards electrical vehicles. We would probably like to have investments in Canada in battery production, help in producing electrical cars. We purchase a very large number of vehicles from Hyundai and Kia, and many of these will become electrical vehicles, so more production in Canada. And we would like to combine that with strategic issues. We would like to see South Korea help Ukraine. So far, they have not been willing to sell directly to Ukraine. They have not even approved the indirect sale of shells that they produce. They produce 155 millimeter shells to Ukraine. So we want to move along the entire spectrum: political cooperation, enhanced strategic relations, as well as continuing growth in our economic relationship.
Now, the reluctance to sell directly to Ukraine, is that whose influence is resulting in that?
South Korea is very concerned about its relationship with Russia, and they do not want to endanger that relationship. So they are super cautious because they know Russia can influence North Korea, and that Russia has a strong relationship with China, which South Korea hopes is acting as a restraining element in the case of North Korea. Let's not forget that the leadership of North Korea is not particularly stable. At least we don't see it as very stable, and yet they have nuclear weapons that could utterly devastate South Korea. South Korea has become an extraordinarily successful, prosperous democracy, but all that could end in a nuclear attack from North Korea.
Moving along then to the G7 summit in Hiroshima, of course, one of two cities on which the U.S. dropped the atomic bomb. What do you make of the symbolism of that location?
It is very important symbolism because it was hoped after we saw the horrors of what nuclear weapons cause in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that the world would learn from that, that we would be deterred from producing, employing, threatening the use of nuclear weapons. But unfortunately, the world does not seem to have learned. Proliferation continues. More and more countries wish to get nuclear weapons, including the fanatical leadership of Iran. And North Korea has them all already. So I think the message here is that the G7 does not want to see further proliferation, that we reject the threats of the use of nuclear weapons that have been made by Vladimir Putin. And we want to present a united front in the city, and now that is a peaceful, prosperous, surviving city of this horrific use of nuclear weapons, and send the message that the most powerful democratic countries already share values, but they are on the same policy page.
So how do you see that playing out? For instance, how do you think some of those ideas could be forwarded at the G7?
there are great opportunities to show unity, and hopefully we're not going to have Emmanuel Macron freelancing again the way he did when he went to China and said things that he had to basically retract, where he wanted to distance himself from the United States and tried to assume a kind of goalless leadership of Europe, which was foolhardy as it was, overly ambitious. This is a chance to move along in terms of dealing with the environmental threats, of boosting economic relations and enhancing international economic stability, diversifying supply chains so we are not as dependent on China as we have been, and of also sending a message that the G7 would continue to support Ukraine in the long term. So Mr. Putin cannot just assume that he can just wait it out, that time is on is going to work in his favor.
I mean, it's interesting when you think about the influence of China, though, on G7 countries. How there's even in, you know, batteries alone, in terms of products that are being used right now, what do the G7 countries have to do to avoid China's influence?
We have allowed ourselves to become astonishingly dependent on inexpensive Chinese products, often produced in extremely difficult and exploitative labor conditions, because it was convenient. But we are learning that the Belt and Road Initiative is not some innocuous economic policy, that the Chinese Communist Party has nationalistic as well as ideological ambitions. And, for example, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, which has been following the use of economic coercion by China, has noted that between 2019 and 2022, China engaged in 53 major incidents of economic coercion compared to only 13 between 2014 and 2018. So we are facing an increasingly assertive China, and unless we diversify the supply line, unless we become better at producing electrical batteries, solar panels in the developed world, then that dependence, that vulnerability is not going to go away, and that puts us in a rather difficult situation.
Well, Ron, we'll hold it there, but thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Oberon, Professor of International Relations and Political Science at the University of Toronto, also an associate of the Davis Center at Harvard University. If you have thoughts on what he had to say, all in a day at CBC.ca.